Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop and joining me is nobody other than my Shiba Inu, dog Cash, who's in here now. I have another one downstairs, but Cash has already interrupted my podcast twice now, so Cash is going to be sitting on the sidelines for a little bit longer, but it's just me and I'll be continuing a little bit of something that we started last week. We spent some time going through a lot of the innovative new technologies with a real focus on AI and some of the tools that are out there that, you know, I wanted to give our audience an idea of maybe some things to experiment with. And I think it's key in publishing that you do spend time experimenting and innovating. And I always tell you, if you listen to the show for, you know, more than one episode, you've probably heard me say, if you're listening to the show, I think you're ahead of the curve. Because I think you're trying to figure out what's going on. You're trying to figure out maybe reading the tea leaves a little bit when we go over different news items and things like that to see where are things headed so that you can try this stuff. And I think one of the things that maybe has hurt publishers historically, and not even just digital publishers, but all forms and fashions, is those that have been afraid of moving their primary business. And publishers have always been in the content business, but the type of content has changed a lot. And there are definitely fixtures that you can look across mediums and eras that have survived and those that haven't. And I think that as long as you're trying to figure out, like, what does my audience want and where are they, I think you're doing a lot in terms of surpassing many that I think kind of get locked in and focused on probably doing their business and not really relating to their audience. But with that being said, we're going to continue on with that theme in this episode. If you do enjoy this episode and the previous one, I didn't want to do end of year wrap-ups. I've actually been wanting to do these two episodes for the past six months, who knows. But I think that it's a lot of fun doing this stuff. I personally enjoy this content. I like finding out about what new tools and technologies are out there so that I can maybe do things faster. Sometimes I like to just try something, make sure that it's good enough so that I can get it out there and see if it's even worth more time. And tools can help you do that. This episode is going to focus a little bit more on technical, I would say, tools towards the end. And then maybe a little bit more towards web development and just sort of building a site in the beginning. So one of the things I did is I didn't know if this episode would be one that everyone enjoyed quite the same. So I tried to front load some of the things that I'll be talking about at a very simple level and focusing on things like, you know, really simple things like redirects and images and different, you know, methods and tools for that kind of stuff. So I figured that's something that everybody could relate to. And if the episode reaches a point where, you know, you're like, I'm out, yeah, just, you can stop listening. That's okay too. I mean, I think the point here is we want to make something that's good for the audience. And I would love your feedback at thepublisherlab.org. There is a companion video for this in some form or fashion. And if you're watching right now, you can see my plug here for the Publisher Lab. I keep saying the Publisher Lab. It's publisherlab.org. Excuse me. Producer Manny would not love me to misrepresent our domain name, but right here you can leave us some feedback, and yeah, I'd love it. I think it, you know, we really do try to cater to what we hear in terms of comments and things like that from you, our audience. So without any further ado, I actually thought I would start someplace kind of funny, which is hardware. So one of the things that is made, I almost can't work without it, so maybe it's a handicap now, but I work a lot on various programs, and I have a lot of different windows and software and technologies running, so I use a macro pad pretty much everywhere I possibly can. So I have some at my office, I have some here at home. I hand them out to people whenever I get new ones, they're essentially just, for those that are just listening, they're just a keypad. So it would look like, you know, almost like the number keypad that's on an extended keyboard, or, you know, it could be any number of keys. You can get some that are just one key. I've seen some on Amazon that literally just, it's two keys that come you plug into your computer or device, just like a keyboard, and one says copy and the other says paste. And I would say that alone saves you a little bit of, you know, finger travel time maybe. But, you know, I know a lot of people really like using shortcuts. And if you don't, and if you're like, that's over my head, I'm not trying to use macros and shortcuts and figure out all the different little fast ways to use a keyboard, I would say get a macro pad, because I think it encourages you to want to try doing that sort of thing. So I would just recommend in two ways, like if you want to try this, and see if you find that it helps you be more productive, is I would get some kind of window manager software. You can download these off of, you know, if you're using a Mac, App Store, any number of places like that. If you're on a PC, just type in, you know, free window manager, and there's probably 1,000. And I use Magnet, for example, on Mac. Not sure if it's there's a PC version of it or not. But it allows you to, here, I'll show you really quick if you're watching, manage my windows. See? Move them into thirds. Yeah, it even asked me right now, are you enjoying Magnet? I kind of am, especially right now. It was a good time to ask. So that being said, yeah, I would give these things a try, because you can set up the shortcuts to move your windows around on the screen. You know, simple things like copy, paste, undo. And I think you just add those, you know, functions to something like a macro keypad, and you'll find that, yeah, you almost don't want to work without it. All right. Ending that sales pitch. When we think about building sites, I think the easiest way to sort of start getting into things that maybe, towards the end will be more technical for different users would be to focus on basically, like, we're going to work backwards. You know, you think about the things that you put on a page right before you publish it. So that's something that everybody that's a publisher listening to this podcast has probably done. And so a lot of times, you know, the finishing touches are things that are images or media. And one of the things that I think has been lost here more recently is sort of like the creativity of things like images. And I'm not talking about AI generated ones. But I mean, the sort of move for speed on the web really sort of put a bullet in things like GIFs or GIFs, depending on how you want to pronounce it, and different types of animations and videos that people would have that maybe in many cases are representing, you know, like something like this. This is kind of cool, right? Like if you're looking at my screen, it's this animated, you know, astronaut that's kind of touching a solar system in space against the backdrop of this software called SVG. ATOR. So it's S, it looks like SV Gator. They only highlight the SVG, and there's no gators on their website. So I don't think it has anything to do with gators. It's just SVGator. And it is a tool that kind of like looks a little bit like maybe a Photoshop. I'll take you into it really briefly for those that are watching, if it'll let me in really quick. There we go. So if you go into it, it looks a little bit like a Photoshop, and it's basically just a canvas where you can basically draw shapes. There's a lot in here similar to like a Canva. And then you can basically just create these little simple animations. It's like maybe a dumbed down version of Canva, but it does it all in SVG. So this is something that you could then export, and you could add to your site as an HTML tag or upload it. And it's going to be a vector graphic that's hosted on your site and doesn't require any external JavaScript or, you know, external programs to run. So it's a good way, in my opinion, of adding things like animations and vector graphics to your website that aren't, you know, embeds or images or something that's very, very heavy in terms of, rendering to the user. So this would be a way around, you know, letting something like site speed hinder your creativity and, you know, the look and feel of the graphics on your website. And you don't have to use this software, by the way. I just think in general, SVGs are a really nice hack for improving overall sort of like quality of images on your site. I'll give you an example. Like when you upload a really beautiful PNG image on a website that you might have, it looks pretty good on the web, but then you start looking at it in all, it doesn't matter what pixel rate or, you know, what quality of the images, it never quite looks perfect whenever you have to deal with something that's responsive. But in SVG, on the other hand, always looks really, really slick. And I can give you an example of a site that has a lot of SVGs on it. So this one right here, Vercel. So very, very sharp here. So that's not an image. That would be an SVG. Something like this is an SVG. Notice how the interactivity of the charts, pretty cool, right? And you can tell like just the fidelity of it is very, very good. And what we're looking at here is basically a series of what seem to be images and charts on a site, and but yet, you know, you look at it and you go, man, they're moving around, they're animated, they also the fidelity is obviously really great. You know, these things are not taking up near the same bandwidth as something like an image, and it's a mixture of both SVGs and I think in some cases Lottie images or Lottie animations. You can look both of those up, but the difference primarily between something like an SVG animation or CSS animations and something like a Lottie animation is Lottie is essentially using JSON. So it's a flat JSON file, which is very small and easy to store and can be hosted locally. And then it's using that JSON data as sort of like the points in the way that an SVG sort of has a mapping out of it. It's both a file and displays as an image. Without getting too much further into it, I'll just highlight that Lottie images or Lottie animations are pretty simple. And all these things are things that you can actually like statically load on the page or host your own. So that automatically is going to make using these sort of like technologies and methods for building on the web incredibly fast. And then again, it's like, how do you beat this kind of quality? You're not going to get better fidelity from videos or images. Here's another one. So Spirit app.io. This is a really popular one. You know, you can, it's probably, I would say, a little bit more user-friendly version of making more complex animations than something like an SVG Aider, SVG Gator. Spirit app.io. They have a playground here. So if you just want to, you know, dig right in and get started, you know, I think they have a Chrome extension, and then you can get started on their website. Draw.io is another really interesting free tool that I would highlight to everyone. So what I really like about it, and I have it up on my screen at the moment, it's both you can download it as a desktop application or just use their web browser based web app. And it allows you to, I mean, you look at it on the surface and you go, well, it looks a little bit like a Canva, or maybe a Photoshop. It has some sort of like, you know, default shapes and miscellaneous sort of things. It looks like it'd be great for, yes, you guessed it, wireframing or diagramming. And what I really like about something like this is that it has a lot of already you can find more online, but they have a good library of existing sort of diagrams from all walks of life that you might be interested in giving a try. So this is everything from tables to, I don't know. I was trying to see if I could pull up, here we go. So you've got everything from clip art to, you know, cloud infrastructure to wireframing of websites to, it goes really deep in terms of all the different things that are out there. Like you can preload all these different icons and things like that. So if you wanted to wireframe a new site, or you wanted to, you know, maybe design something that looks, you know, very realistic and then give it to ChatGPT to build or something like that, you could. But what I think the value in something like this comes in is our users are coming to sites, and the idea that they want to read every word on the page, I think, I mean, in some cases that's the case, but I think a lot of cases they're looking for answers or they want information. And giving them more words is not always the right solution. I think the myth in SEO of just more is better. Hopefully most have kind of moved past that sort of idea. Certainly the data represents that it's not necessarily the case. But sometimes more information is needed, but not more words. And I think that diagrams are a really great example of this. And you can actually spin up really good examples of things in something like draw.io really fast. And then again, you can export and you can have something that looks like the site that I was showing to our viewers a moment ago, Vercel, where you've got something that is very, you know, really slick looking, and it's a diagram and it explains more than the words do. And I think that that's going to be a real secret here in the future, partially because, you know, why is it that you don't want to create these really dynamic diagrams sometimes from an SEO perspective? Well, it's because the content, the words, you know, whether it's your keywords or whatever, those things are embedded in the image, and it's not necessarily something that a Google bot is going to crawl. So you almost would think of it as you're not getting necessarily credit for some of the content that you've written or put on your page. But with an SVG, you are, because those words and different things like that, those things all load as code, HTML. And I think it makes total sense why you would want to do something like this. If you could organize your text in a more, you know, visually appealing way, connect with your readers, I think it's an advantage. I definitely read more from people that present the information to me in, you know, visually, you know, appealing ways. Not just from like it catches my eye, but I enjoy reading it more. And then, so this one is actually, this one I just came across here recently. It's called Mox, or it's called Splendids. It's Splendidis. Splendidis? I don't know. You don't want me to pronounce things. I'm from rural Missouri. I struggle enough with the English language, but you can look at something like this on my screen, and if you can't see it, it is a very beautiful form of screen capture software where you can take really kind of cool screenshots that you can customize on your own screen. So if you wanted to, you know, create a glass effect or something like that as you were taking it, or you want to crop your particular screenshot, you can. But then you can place it in these very, very high quality device type or browser window, pretty much everything that you would ever see through a screen or see on the web. You can create these really, really customized high quality screenshots. And I know for many of you that do instructionals, or maybe you think about anything that you might want to show on a mobile phone screen or a desktop screen or inside of a browser or something like that, this is a really great tool for improving sort of like how quickly and how good some of those things can look. Akriti. So Akriti is that's what they call it, but I guess the website is shahadat.pro. Shahadat.pro. So the only reason I point this out, and it's listed as the Akriti Abstract Vector Shapes. So what these are is a bunch of free 100 plus vector shapes and things like that, which if you start using things like SVGs, or you want to experiment with it at all, or diagrams, one of the things you realize is you want some SVG shapes, or you know, things that maybe you can use as unique patterns or design elements. This is a really nice free library of that sort of thing. I won't give it much more of a plug than that. But I think sort of one of the best places to go, if you're like, Tyler, I want to get started with Lottie animations. Tyler, I want to get started with 3D illustrations. If you're listening to our last episode, or vectors or SVGs, like what you were just talking about, I want to get involved. But it seems like maybe I'm not going to be the designer that can make this stuff. Iconscout.com, the amount of free stuff on here is amazing. They do have paid versions of it that I think are more than fair, but I mean, you're talking, it says they have over 300,000 3D assets with the source files, over 300,000 Lottie animations, icons and graphics. And so you can spin up, they have their own software. I think it's called, let's see, where is it at? Well, they have their own software as well. That's a design software that you can just import the stuff into if you want to, or you can just literally pull it up in your own stuff. I think it's called Peacon, and it's very, very, very easy to just access. I mean, just tons of illustrations, graphics, icons, you name it. So yeah, I think it's a really good tool. And that's iconscout.com. So now we're going to move away from a little bit more of the front end stuff, and I'm going to start kind of digging into a couple things that I've mentioned this year that I think are important. So one is being able to manage and take advantage of things like AI on the web. And I think a big portion of ChatGPT's main benefit to folks that are publishers that are building on the web is its ability to sort of close the gap between what an amateur developer and an expert developer can do. So I was never a great developer. I knew enough to be dangerous and could build things that usually other people could fix for me at different walks and points in my career. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed about something like a ChatGPT since its inception is it has allowed me to get past many of the things that may have been more complex or just too much time for me to invest in before. And since then, it's not just the experience of, I would say over the last maybe 2 years of having something do these things for you. It's really about having it do it and then being able to see what had been done. It's like having your own personal tutor or mentor. And I think it's really important for that reason. If you're a publisher and you do any of your own sort of web development, or you know, honestly, if you manage your site and you have to do anything with it, I think you should really invest a little bit of time in understanding just the frameworks and nature of the web. And in the spirit of working backwards, I have a site here called autorejects.xyz. I really love this because sometimes whether you're running redirects in something as simple as WordPress or writing a robot.txt file or who knows, you need a rejects, which is basically a rule that says I want all my pages with slash blog after them to redirect to my root domain with the same slug, just with the blog removed. Well, like you have to write, you know, a stupid rejects for that. Well, what's nice is something like this does it for you using plain language. So it's like match all folders with slash blog to my root domain. Let's see if it does that one any good. So it's an AI tool that does this. Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. So it gives you this great little rejects thing. So if you don't know what a rejects looks like, most of the time they look like a slash and a period and a semicolon, maybe a dollar sign. You never know. But I hate rejects. I hate writing them. I hate thinking through them. And this really takes, I mean, there's probably a lot of you listening right now. They're like, oh my God, I could have used that a billion years ago. Me too. Next, I'm going to point out a couple things that were requested by listeners throughout the over the course of the year, and I think both of these are worthy of paying attention to, specifically if you use WordPress, because that's kind of the examples, and I'll kind of finish with a couple of things that I think are worth exploring this year if you just want a little bit of a take-home project. So first, I would say download JSON Viewer or an equivalency Chrome extension in your browser. JSON Viewer is incredibly popular, and yeah, it's JSON Viewer. In the Chrome store, you download it as an extension. And then if you're looking at my screen right now, you're like, what is that? It's nothing but just letters and numbers just filling infinitely the screen. And it's because I've taken one of my sites and I've added this extension. And I think we've had this other places, but I'll read it slowly so that you can come back to this if you're jogging or who knows. So take your WordPress website, the full domain name, type it into the browser, and then type slash wp-json slash wp slash v2 slash posts question mark underscore embed. And we'll try to make sure that this goes up in the companion blog so that you can, just click that. But you can also search WordPress JSON REST API URL or something like that on Google and probably find this. The underscore embed at the end just means it's going to return my images and things like that with the source URL. And I'll show you why that is something that I'm interested in here in a minute. But my JSON viewer here is telling me it can do a better job of organizing this. So I'm going to click on the little message from it. And all of a sudden, all those letters and numbers that are in my browser from typing in my, you know, WordPress JSON REST API URL, it's very well organized into a JSON file. So just structured, sort of like how Outline is. And what you're going to see here, and to the horror of maybe some people that are publishers, you're about to learn that all of your WordPress content is available to the world via an API. And it is WordPress REST API, unless you hide it. By default, WordPress makes this available. You know, somebody can steal your content today. It's not very hard to, you know, to take it. You know, I don't think there's really much value in, you know, scraping content off the internet. You know, I know that some publishers really have a problem with it. I think your time is more well spent really focused on things that are actually you can do something about and that actually benefit you. The chances of somebody else stealing all your content and making lots of money, I've heard lots of horror stories. I've never seen it, never really seen anything outside of people making a quick buck off of, you know, using somebody else's content to, you know, arbitrage ads to or something like that. But I'm sure there are cases. Nevertheless, your content can be easily hidden. You can, I'm sure there's plugins and stuff for it, but you know, the REST API is on by default. So if you want to make it harder for people to take your content, you definitely would want to shut off this API, which is basically an endpoint that would allow anybody to use this URL or any series of queries. The question mark at the end of this URL is telling you that basically everything that comes after this is some type of query or, you know, a specific sort of filter. And so you could, you know, everything here, all the images, the content itself, how it's rendered, all of that exists here on the end of this REST API. Now, why is that something that maybe you're interested in? Well, another tool that I really like, and for those that are maybe more technical, this is going to be a real basic one, but for those that aren't, you might want to try something out called Postman. So Postman, you can go to postman.com. It is a user interface that allows you to take things like this REST API URL, put it into it, and it creates basically an interface that and a set of tools that make it really easy for you to sort of start working with things like APIs. So if you wanted to use an API to call something from a database to bring in charts or live data or something to your website, and you've always dreamt of doing that, managing APIs and sort of figuring out how to do a lot of that stuff can be intimidating. And so a good place to get started is something like this, which then allows you to sort of like organize. So you can see here, this is all my content here, and it's being able to be previewed because it's actually pulling in this HTML. But I can get all of this sort of organized here inside of Postman. And Postman is a way of being able to sort of like figure out what types of headers, what's in the body, pre-request scripts, and just be able to test, like, you know, different variations. If I wanted to call just my categories, you could use ChatGPT to say write, you know, and WordPress posts API requests for all my categories that end in the letter B or something. I don't know. And you could then have a much longer URL that you put in here, test, see, is that returning the information that I wanted? And the same goes for if you were to go to something like OpenAPI or just search a list of available free APIs online. You may be surprised at just how much data is out there that maybe your audience could have organized in a way that makes, you know, makes for great content. And I think that that's one of the things that I would encourage people to think about with their audience this year is that written words are not always the content that your audience wants, and that doesn't necessarily even mean something like video. It means content. It means like there's information out in the world that hasn't been organized or collected yet, and it's something that people want, and that's creating content. It doesn't have to be, you know, 1,000 words and SEO optimized to death for it to be great content, and great content always wins. And that sort of ends the REST API sort of WordPress example. I will say I'm not a huge fan of WordPress. I think it's going to fall behind, and that's just my personal opinion. And I think that being able to find ways to increase your knowledge so that you can move away from it is a really good approach, personally. I had mentioned too earlier this year something about MDX and being able to get your content into something like Markdown. I asked ChatGPT to make me a Markdown or to export all my blogs and their fields, change essentially the names, and then I asked it to basically reformat this as MDX, which is a, you know, sort of like augmented form of Markdown, which Markdown content is pretty simple looking. It looks basically like a plain text version of content, like an article, like a draft or something. And I said, make all those posts individual MDX files and then output it to a folder on my local device. ChatGPT wrote me a perfect Python script. If you're like, oh my God, I'm already over my head here. Just download something called Microsoft VS Code Studio. It's free software. Get yourself kind of familiar with it. Load up something in there called a terminal. And then figure out what is running in your terminal. It'll give you an idea of, you know, what type of terminal it is. And then search how to install Python 3 or pip on there. And then once you've done that, you can ask ChatGPT, you know, in Python, write me a script that will do X, Y, or Z on my site, or, you know, do some kind of processing. You've got all these APIs that maybe you can go extract some data from and say, hey, you know, write a script for me that takes both of these, you know, API calls and then merges them together somehow. So, you know, you're the creative one here, and it can write you a script that will do that. And then from there, you can just click run. Once you've done that, you just will install pip through your terminal, and then whatever file you have, you add a .py extension. ChatGPT should give you many clarifiers on that, and then you click run in your Visual Code Studio, and whatever program, you know, you wanted to run there will run. And I think that the reason why I think it's important to experiment with this stuff is because I think it adds such a strong dimension to your ability to make content. And it's also leaning towards the way that I think a lot of the web is being built right now. When one of the examples earlier I gave, Vercel, vercel.com is an example. Cloudflare Pages is another here, where you can essentially host and deploy things for free. And if not for free, at very, very low cost on the edge. They're blazing fast. And this idea that you can only kind of cache stuff there is a bit, I mean, it's pretty significantly outdated, because now with the nature of sort of the lightweight technology and the edge cloud, you can do a lot of, you can do very advanced programming on the edge. And I think something like a Vercel or Cloudflare Pages is a really good place to start for publishers, because you can upload a static HTML page, just drag and drop to Cloudflare Pages. And with Vercel, I would say a great way to get familiar with, you know, something maybe you're interested in would be to just create a free account and then download one of their like starters. So like, let's see here. Oh, not create a team. They have if you go on their site and you create a project and you click, you know, get a demo, start deploying or whatever, you'll see this huge library of basically like tons and tons of templates of everything you can imagine. So everything from AI apps that, you know, like you can create your own sort of like profile pick creator, visual app, chat apps. You can create obviously blogs and websites that are pre-connected to a headless CMS, like everything that you can imagine, you know, web application software, mobile apps, e-commerce websites. They have templates of these things that are really already built in these frameworks like React and Next.js and things like that. And you can just click deploy and it will build it, deploy it, and all of that for free. And then you can work backwards and start kind of maybe hacking it apart and figuring out like how some of this stuff works. And maybe you change your you know, the little AI template app that you created on something like a Vercel, and next thing you know, it's a chat app that does something totally different that maybe your audience really enjoys. So I think these are all fun ways to experiment with these technologies for those of you that are already maybe pretty well established in terms of web development knowledge and technical expertise. I'm sure that there's nothing I've touched on here that's overly enlightening, but hopefully at least some of the ideas espoused here have allowed you to maybe kind of think about some of this a little bit differently. And if not, thanks for listening anyways. It's been a great 2023, turning the page to 2024. And I've really enjoyed doing this podcast and really enjoy the feedback from everyone. And I want to wish everyone a happy new year. And I'm looking forward to what 2024 has to hold for us. And I will say, like I always do, I'm extremely optimistic about publishing's future. And hopefully you are too. I'll see you next time on The Publisher Lab.